College students around the country will soon be graduating and beginning their new life. We will get some advice for young people starting off this hour, but maybe even have some advice for you, too, if you are in a place or a job you don't find fulfilling. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with a guest who says that our work should be an extension of our interests and our values, and we shouldn't defer happiness until after we retire. We will talk with the co-author of Roadmap, the Get It Together Guide for Figuring Out What to Do with Your Life. And we'll welcome your questions for him. We'll welcome any advice or any wisdom that you might have along these lines, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Nathan Gebhard, a co-founder and creative director of Road Trip Nation, which is an online community dedicated to helping people explore career choices. Road Trip Nation is also a show on public television stations, so check your local listings. Gebhard is also co-author of the book Roadmap, the Get It Together Guide for Figuring Out What to Do with Your Life. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm thinking of giving this book to my niece who's going to be graduating from UW-Madison in 2 weeks. Is this who it's geared for?
Well, I mean, I think you said it very well in the opening. I think it's very much geared for somebody at an inflection point in their life. You know, I think from a graduating senior to somebody looking to change their career, we really wanted to kind of make sure that it was tapping more that kind of psychographic in the sense of somebody asking that question, what am I going to do with my life?
Yeah, so you, this book started with a road trip that you and three friends went on after you graduated from college. You didn't know what you wanted to do with your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the interesting thing. People often ask us, like, you know, how did you do the business plan and, you know, what did you kind of, what was the process? And for us, there was no business plan. There was no process other than total confusion about who we were and what we wanted after college. And so a very simple idea, which was if we're confused and lost, we should talk to some people that have figured it out, that have built lives around their interests. And a single road trip of interviewing 85 people over the course of 3 months around the country turned into, as you said, now season 13 on public television documentary series, a few books, and a pretty vibrant community of people trying to define their own roads in life.
Yeah, so how did you, what dilemmas were you dealing with when it came to what to do next?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, for me, I think there was probably two dilemmas. I think there was this kind of noise from society, and the noise is kind of the stuff of like, you should be a doctor, you should be a lawyer, you're not smart enough to be an accountant, you know, any of that stuff that kind of we hear from society but doesn't really necessarily take into account who we are. And so, you know, my noise was very much this idea. I was always interested in art and design, but the noise was, oh, you'll never make any money, you'll be poor, and you'll be homeless, and you'll likely live under the boardwalk, something like that. And I had no exposure to people in the design community. The only thing I knew about was painters, and I was a really bad painter, and so I had no way to kind of stand up for myself and say, no, but there's this thing called graphic design or front-end design, all these different, you know, interests that I would have been able to kind of pursue, but I had no exposure to them. So it's kind of this noise meets lack of exposure, and I just kind of caved and went off and majored in business thinking I would be a consultant. And a very fortuitous lunch, I quickly realized that I was not going to be a consultant.
And so how did Road Trip Nation then come out of your dilemma?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were probably, you know, I would say we were probably 2 weeks into the road trip. So that first road trip was pure cold calls to anybody that would kind of hear our story. We were nobody. We were just four college students, and so it wasn't like anybody was doing it for press opportunities. But we got this really amazing opportunity to speak to people like the founder of Starbucks, the director of Saturday Night Live, the founder of Cliff Bar, all these different unique people who really did deeply connect with that sense of being lost and confused. And I think we were so caught off guard that both these people would want to talk to us. But then when we sat down and talked with them, we realized that they had those same feelings of doubt, the same moments of confusion and an inability to kind of match their own curiosity with, an occupation or a career. And I think probably 2 weeks into that trip, we just realized these conversations were so much deeper than and so much more universal than just ourselves. And so it quickly turned from, after this road trip, we'll just, we'll figure out that job and then we'll live happily ever after. And it really kind of became just a calling or a dedication that we've kind of picked up from that day almost 15 years ago to share these stories and share these experiences. So kind of amassed this massive video archive, which the book is really sitting on top of, which is nearly 1,000 interviews since 2001.
Yeah, so all of these people at some point didn't know what to do with their lives, and any common themes in what they ended up doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the first theme was people were able to kind of find their own way to block that noise and really think about what interested them. As you had said in the opening, I think that first and most fundamental theme is that we saw that people that were truly happy that found themselves in an occupation that was authentic to who they were, they didn't chase after this occupation. They pursued the things that they were interested in. And it was kind of this evolution of pursuing an interest, gaining skill, and then evolving to that next iteration. I think another one was this idea of living in beta. And it's kind of a software term, but the idea is that we're always constantly evolving and changing. And we saw people be very, very open to that. It was a really kind of shocking to hear even people that were very, very successful in our eyes say, well, I'm still figuring it out. I don't know what I want to do next. But, it was almost a sense of like freedom and empowerment that you didn't have to choose one thing and then commit to that for the rest of your life.
So tell us about roadmap. Why do we need a roadmap?
Well, I mean, I think the book is really something that we've been sitting on for a long time. For the most part, we've never really taken a stance and said, like, how does somebody, what's a process, how does somebody build a life, not a resume? And when we really sat there and looked at it, we wanted to create, like, this open framework that anybody could kind of take and adapt in their own life. And it wasn't something that became prescriptive. It wasn't something that said, follow these 5 steps and you'll be cured. And so what we did is we went through these 1,000-plus interviews and, probably 20,000 hours of interview content and really sat there and said, what are the commonalities between everybody and how do we reconcile people who have totally different pieces of advice? In one road trip on one leg, we'll go from and somebody who says you need to deeply focus and stay really singular in your approach, and then the next person will say you need to be very dynamic and you need to evolve and create experiences that are totally different so that you can bring those experiences together in a unique way. And so roadmap to us was this really exciting way for us to present all of these ideas, but really focus on those consistent themes like shedding the noise or defining success for yourself or pursuing your interests and mashing those interests up. And then it really gets to the grit of how you actually get to that place. So the book is kind of divided up in these 3 sections of let go, define, become. And that's kind of this process of self-construction that we see as a continual process to use in the book.
Yeah, and talk some about what figuring out what to do with your life has to do with road trips. Should we literally go on a road trip?
No, I mean, if you can, by all means. I mean, I think certainly there's an element. I would say the fundamental piece for us with the road trip was it was getting us out of our comfort zone. And I think we all have different ways to do that. It was really exciting to be in New York for the first time, but one of the biggest realizations I had when I came back from the road trip was I have not explored, like, more than 5% of my own town. Like the idea that I just get stuck in my routine and I'm not kind of pushing myself out of my comfort zone, I'm not exposing myself to different things, is a really fundamental piece. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest things we got from the road trip and what we've been dedicated to from the day one, and why this book is so important, is that it's bringing that level of exposure so that when somebody's wrestling with, oh, I'm interested in the Brady Bunch, but I have no idea how to apply that, they can find somebody's story like Jill Soloway and realize that, wow, she had this really silly interest and she was able to apply that in a way that brought her all the way to the place of creating and directing Transparent, and she just got a Golden Globe for it.
We are talking about a roadmap for your life with Nathan Gebhard, co-founder, creative director of Road Trip Nation, which is an online community dedicated to helping people exploring career choices, and Road Trip Nation, also a show on public television stations. He is also co-author of the new book, Roadmap, The Get It Together Guide for Figuring Out What to Do with Your Life. So how did you figure out what to do with your life? And are you happy? Are you staying there? Are you looking, maybe switching careers or finding that that dream job that you've always wanted? And what advice might you have for college students who are going to be graduating soon and starting their new lives? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a co-author of the new book, Roadmap, The Get It Together Guide for Figuring Out What to Do with Your Life. And we are welcoming your questions and your experiences, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Nathan Gebhard, our guest, co-founder, creative director for Road Trip Nation, which is an online community and a show on public television stations. And we have a number of callers who want to weigh in. But let me ask you first, you talk about how we should step off the assembly line of other people's expectations.
Yeah.
and craft our own roadmap to a satisfying life. How do we know if we're on the assembly line of other people's expectations?
I mean, I think it takes space. I think it takes a lot of thoughtfulness about really who you are and what matters to you. And I would say probably the best realization for us on that road trip was we kind of went into it with this idea that success is this universal thing that we all subscribe to. And quickly, as we started to ask different people, like, what was success to them, we realized that everybody had a different definition. Those that were truly happy, those that really committed to their own authentic life, defined success differently. David Neeleman, the guy that started JetBlue, you know, he defines success as mattering. Somebody else might define it as finding their joy or being connected to family. And I think that that's probably the first thing, is to look at what success is to you, how you innately define that, and make sure that that is your own. You're the author of that definition, and not your parents or your peers or your society.
Yeah, so for example, I am very lucky, and I will say that I very early on, high school, wanted to be going to journalism. I wanted to change the world. I wanted to help people. I wanted to help inform people. I thought it was a valuable thing to do, and I am very satisfied doing that. So,
did you know that radio existed when you were thinking journalism?
Oh, I was thinking TV. I wanted to be a star, too. But I did know radio existed, but I didn't really know Wisconsin public radio in this kind of format existed. So
that transition from TV to radio?
Yeah, I did.
Understanding your own authentic self.
Yeah, I did. And I know you talked to Ira Glass,
yeah.
What did you learn from him?
Yeah, Ira, two radio people that I think were phenomenal, Ira Glass and then Jed Abumrad. Ira had this great piece, and I think that it's so true, and it fits, I think, very much many people coming out of college, which is, he said, most of us get to this place where we've identified something that we want to do, and in his context, it was radio, right? So he had identified radio at this point in his life and said, okay, I like this. But in his words, everything he was creating was crap. Like, it was just not any good. But he had the ability to know what was good. So there's this total tension between our ability to create, our skill set, and what we know is great. And so he said most people do not spend the time to cross that chasm. They get maybe halfway through, and they don't give it that, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's kind of idea of 10,000 hours, that time to really commit and gain skills. And he said that that was a really important part for him, was to just do the work to get in the practice of constantly editing and creating radio segments, and then getting to the final place where you can actually be both talented and know what is good and not. And I thought that was such a poignant point for somebody, myself in particular, who was not a very good artist but wanted to find a way to be connected to art and design.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go to some calls. Dave in Elroy is with us. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hey, Dave.
Hi. I kind of sort of object to this idea, you know, of very early on planning your life and then going after it. I know some people do that and are very successful at it. I have followed an entirely different pattern, which I call the paramecium life plan, where you go along till you bump into a wall, and then you turn a corner, and look, oh, there's a clear path over there. I'll follow that for a while. And that's how my career has gone. I have a degree in soil science and ended up working in public relations, which is, I don't know too many people that make that kind of a leap. It's been a lot of fun. And so I think that's an alternative. I'm not saying that's, you know, for everybody, because some people like to plan things to the last degree. But, you know, you don't have to do that. You can just kind of bounce around and go with the opportunities, go with the flow.
Yeah, I guess that's true, Nathan. You don't have to, you know, say this is the job and I'm going to stick it to the same job for the rest of my life.
Right. I mean, I think, Dave, I would love to clarify that I actually just completely agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think the idea that you can plan your life, I think that book would have been called like The Railroad Tracks or something like that. You know, for us, the analogy of the roadmap is you can really go any and all different ways. You know, from the outside of your door to my door, there's a million different routes that we can take. And I think the probably best analogy that we had on the road was from this guy named Randy Komizar. He wrote The Monk and the Riddle, and that is now gone from being a author to a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley. So he knows what you're talking about on the paramecium plan. And he said, he said very succinctly, life is only linear in the rearview mirror. And I think I just totally relate to your analogy of the paramecium. Every time you bump into that wall, that wall either interests you or that next route interests you, and then you pursue that. But very few people have that pure insight of exactly what they want to do, and then they were actually right, you know, 20, 30 years later.
Thank you, Dave. And talk a little bit more what you mean when you say build a life, not a resume.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially like young people these days, it's just a different form, a resume or a LinkedIn profile, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's really, I very much remember thinking like, oh, I've got to do, if I get this internship, this one will look better on a resume versus this one. And it's kind of this, I go back to like this experience of being in high school, and the method of survival, at least for me, because I was kind of a dork, but like the method of survival for me was to conform and to look like everybody else and to not stand out. And I think like that is also the idea of building a nice, pretty resume. But when you get out into the world of trying to find a job, no employer wants to find sheep. Nobody wants to hire somebody that is the same. They all want to hire people that are really unique and dynamic and true to themselves. And I think that when we looked at how people kind of built a life, they really did it by saying, you know, this might not look that great on a resume, but I'm going to go the other route, and I'm gonna do exactly something that is true to myself. So a good example of that is maybe Richard Linklater. He was the writer and director for Boyhood, very successful film director, and he told his family that he wanted to be a writer, and they said, you know, all you could really do is you know, we're doctors, we don't do writing. Maybe you could write children's books. And he kind of went in the complete 180 degree turn from that and said, you know what, I'm going to pursue this thing. It might not look very good on a resume. What he did is he went and worked for an entire year on an offshore oil rig and saved up enough money to then live very humbly the next year, purely studying film. And none of that would have looked good on a resume. It would have looked like these wild turns, the Paramecium approach maybe. But you can see where that got him to, that he really committed to this interest and he was able to develop skills around it. So it's really this idea of, like, stay true to yourself, and that authentic self, as long as you're hustling, is going to be much more interesting than the official resume.
Anna in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Hi, Anna.
Hi. My message is for recently graduating college students. I think it's a really difficult time after you graduate from college to figure out what's going on, because a lot of students, their lives are dictated, especially their social lives, by the amount of homework that they have, and so it's really hard to focus on anything other than your work. So I agree with you that after college, it's a really great time to explore the things that you haven't explored yet in your off time, because otherwise you're going to find yourself in this sort of, lost world where you don't know what to do with yourself. So just go at it, because, you know, you're going to find something.
I get it, Anna. And maybe you are speaking from personal experience, but you're a recent graduate who might have, you know, got a, you know, good job right after college, and you're working 70 hours a week at it and not really experiencing the life outside the workplace.
Joy, you hit it on the nose.
How did I know? So, Nathan, what about someone like Anna?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things. I think Anna, you speak very well to that moment when you graduate from college and you've got a little bit of flexibility before you commit to that next job. You know, if you've got the opportunity, if you can hold off on getting a job and give yourself a little bit of space. This woman we interviewed named Christina Heinegger had this really amazing story. But basically, she had kind of followed the assembly line, jumped straight from school to graduate school, got into being a consultant, was really, really outwardly successful, but like 10 years into it, realized that she had never created space to truly understand who she was. And so that moment of space was, she just took a rafting trip, going back to the community where she grew up, and instantly remembered like what it was that drove her away from that kind of assembly line. And so she kind of rerouted her life, but it was 10 years later than she could have if she would have just kind of paused for a moment before taking that job that might look, again, great on a resume, but not ideal from a personal standpoint. I think again, I don't know exactly where you're at, but you're already in a position where you've got, you know, I imagine student debt and you've got obligations. Mm-hmm. I think the idea there is to maybe have a more incremental approach. And an example I would give is, we interviewed this man named Tinker Hatfield, and he was an architect. But his true passion, his true interest was sports. He always wanted to be in sports. His family was sports, but here he was being an architect. And he ended up deciding, like, well, I'm going to get to sports in a kind of incremental approach. And that incremental approach was, he went and got a job at Nike as an architect. And he was designing their stores, and he was designing their corporate headquarters, and kind of just took this lateral approach and then step by step moved down into shoe design. And now he's designed, I think, every single one of Michael Jordan's shoes, and now is the vice president of innovation at Nike. But it wasn't this leap. It wasn't quitting a job. It was this kind of very methodical approach. And I think that's an approach where you've got more responsibility, and you can't take these big leaps.
And I don't know if you have some advice based on the people you've talked to, Nathan. Maybe Anna, or maybe people are in a job that they love. They feel it's their true self, and they feel like, you know, happy and satisfied, and that they're helping or whatever. But they just are they're just working this 80-hour week all the time. I mean, you can, I suppose, say, you know what? I'm going to still do what I do, but not exclusively.
Yeah, there's a great story. Charlene Gibson was a very, very successful lawyer in Manhattan. And she was working at a very big law firm. And she was literally sitting there, and she's like, I'm successful, I'm getting paid very well, I'm working crazy hours, and then, like, when I'm not working, like, I kind of have no life, and I'm just thinking, like, well, am I supposed to just go shop and go buy things? and I'll buy things until I die. And she kind of, it was a really, like, comical moment, but you could see, like, this was something, like, she was seriously wrestling with. But her interest was correct. Law was the thing that she loved. It was just the way she applied to that interest that wasn't working for her. And so she ended up leaving Manhattan. She went down, I think, to New Orleans and started a very small law firm with another friend of hers. And in that slower city, in that smaller firm, she was able to kind of control her day more. She was able to kind of breathe back life. And I think kind of reset the clock in terms of values, but she still maintained that path of interest. So that's, I think that resonates with what your question was.
Yeah, it does. Thank you, Anna. Sarah in Zion, Illinois is with us now. Hi, Sarah.
Well, hi, Joy. Hi. I'm like 50 now, and when I was in my mid-20s, I just felt like such a loser because I couldn't fit myself into any of the slots that were available in terms of professions. And I thought, well, that's the only way you define your life. And what's wrong with me that I can't pick one, that nothing seems right to me. And I was really depressed about it. But one day it just dawned on me that I could just have this little, I could do a little mental exercise. I could just imagine, what if I could do whatever I wanted and make a living? Like, what if somehow, you know, that would work out? Was there anything that would really make me happy? And it just came to me in like five, and just really quickly, a couple minutes. And I don't want to tell you what it is because I don't want to, it's kind of embarrassing. But but I realized then that the problem wasn't that I was just a loser. The problem was that the society had developed in a way that made us, that wasn't, and according to my values, wasn't the way it should be. And it had set up these categories that we had to fit ourselves into, and that not everybody can do that. And so once I realized that, and that once I realized there was something that I really cared about, that was my identity and that's what I believed, then it just became a matter of, you know, I'm not the problem, the way the world is the problem. So the best I can do is try to find an option that will suit me best and try to help me spread my values and find satisfaction and do something I care about. And then it was just really easy. And things didn't work out perfectly for me because I had a lot of health problems, but I don't have that sense of what should I do anymore. I just try to do what I best can do.
Sarah, that's great, and I won't press you for what, but you are still doing this embarrassing profession right now, or did it evolve?
It's not a profession. Actually, almost right away, I decided that I had three options. One was a biologist, French teacher, or music therapist. And anyway, I ended up going into French. But then I was sick for a while, and now I'm teaching, doing English as a second language and subbing. It's an elementary school, and it's great. I really love it. And
that's
and
not embarrassing.
Other things that I'm hoping to start doing in the future too. So.
Yeah. Well, there we go, Nathan. I like that she said, "What would I do or could I do if I could do anything to make a living?"
Yeah. I mean, I think I will. I will try to overmatch your embarrassing story. But yeah, I mean, to be an ESL teacher, that is a high calling. So yeah. I say more power to you. Do not be embarrassed by it.
Right.
But the story I kind of alluded to earlier in the program was this woman named Jill Soloway. She's now a very successful writer-director. She wrote Transparent. At the time we interviewed her, she was a writer for Six Feet Under. And she was just talking about this total angst that she had when she was in her, her mid-20s. And her friend just said, like, what do you care about? Like, almost in the sense of, like, I'm tired of you hearing your angst. Like, just what do you care about? And she paused for a long moment and said, the only thing that I could articulate that I cared about was the Brady Bunch.
Wow. That's interesting.
Right? Like, and I think so many of us can identify with, like, something silly like that, the Brady Bunch or snowboarding or whatever it may be. And the difference with Jill is she said, well, I care about the Brady Bunch, and so I'm going to do something about it. And she decided to take an episode, and she thought it would be funny if she took an episode of Brady Bunch and put it on a play on stage and got to watch her friends act it out. But that act both confirmed her skill set and an ability to direct. It also showed to the community around her that she was pretty creative and unique, and that then led step by step to all of the places that ultimately added up to where she is today.
Excellent. We are talking about finding that life, that work that reflects our values and our interests with Nathan Gebhard. He is the co-founder, creative director of Road Trip Nation, which is an online community and a show, a series on public television. And he is co-author of the new book, Roadmap, the Get It Together Guide for Figuring Out What to Do with Your Life. So how did you figure out what to do with your life? What advice do you have to the soon-to-be graduating college students? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Nathan Gebhard. He is co-author of the new book, Roadmap, the Get It Together Guide for Figuring Out What to Do with Your Life. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take another call from Elizabeth in Milwaukee. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for taking my call. I was really excited to hear about this topic. I'd actually never heard of Trip Nation. My comment is simply that not just for the graduating college, but also for people that, like your earlier example, are in the midst of a career and deciding that this isn't what they want in life. I was 26 years old and living in San Francisco. I had a really successful career. I was successful on the outer side, but internally I was completely miserable. And when I was just about to turn 27, I said, I don't know what I want in life, but it's not this. And I basically quit my job and I sold everything I owned. And then I went on an actual road trip, both physically across the nation, but then also internally of figuring out what I really want in life. And I guess my further comment of it is that it wasn't anything linear. It wasn't like this day where I'm like, okay, I've taken this time, I found myself, and now I know what I want. It's been a really messy process, but something I'm super, super grateful for, to be able to have the experience, the opportunity of it. You know, I went into a lot of debt. I made my choice of either going to getting my MBA or taking this 3-year road trip of kind of finding myself. And it's been fantastic, but I can't say that I've gotten anywhere. I think that all the experiences in between, though, have been valuable, and I feel like I'm on the brink of maybe what's next in a more committed way. But I just wanted to make that comment for people that are struggling or thinking, oh, I can't, or oh, I shouldn't, or I'm too old, or it's too late, that I don't think it's ever too late, and I think it's a really, really important part of our life and our human experience to take that opportunity.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. And that, what do you say, Nathan?
And I mean, I think you speak very much to my own experience in that we've seen with people across the country. And I think, you know, I was trying to connect kind of stories to where you're at. And I think one of the things that we do, and maybe it's human nature, I'm not sure, but we tend to fill in the blanks for people's lives. So we fill in the blank that says, okay, David Neeleman, he founded JetBlue. He must have always known what he wanted to do. And Howard Schultz, he started Starbucks. Yep, totally, like, successful from day one. Or the comedian Craig Robinson. And I think when we went on these road trips and we got to really sit with these people, we often got that kind of, like, man, I haven't thought about this in a long time response. And you hear that David Neeleman was fired from Southwest Airlines. You hear that Howard Schultz was the first in his family to go to college, and he literally donated blood to be able to eat in college. And you hear Craig Robinson, who's the comedian that most of us know from The Office and and many other places, and nobody knows that he has a master's in education and that he was a teacher teaching during the day and going to comedy clubs at night while he built up his skill, or Wanda Sykes, who worked at the NSA, until she got enough confidence to kind of confidence and skill to be able to go to comedy full time. So I encourage you to continue on that path, because I think you're right. Everybody has had these kind of setbacks, these evolutions, and we're always kind of on that brink of that next evolution of ourselves. So I think you're exactly right.
You know, but then there's also this, Nathan, maybe, as Elizabeth said, she was in some, you know, at least outwardly successful-looking profession, but was not happy on the inside. Maybe taking this road trip and maybe working in a restaurant and volunteering at the food pantry is going to make you happy inside. You don't have to be the CEO of Starbucks.
We interviewed, one of my favorite interviews was Manny the Lobsterman. We were, maybe this is too much information, but our RV didn't have a shower, so we jumped in ocean bodies of waters and hotel jacuzzis to shower for 3 months. And we were jumping in the Atlantic, and as we were getting out of the water, this lobsterman had pulled up, and we ended up just speaking with him. And he had this just beautiful story of kind of being a lobsterman, but kind of outwardly society was like, well, or his parents were like, you need to get something that's like more professional. And so we went into like, that's right, Y2K compliance training. So he was like going into computers, and he just talked about how it was just sucking his soul, and that he needed to get back out on the ocean to smell the salt and to be out in the sea. And, you know, I think it was like one of those just really pure moments of understanding, like, it is not at all about the outward definition of success. It is about the inward definition of success. And those that are confident enough to write their own script, I think, find happiness much quicker than the others that are chasing after somebody else's definition.
Yeah. Then again, there is, though, the practical problem of having a dream life that doesn't pay enough to pay the bills.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have there's a chapter in the book called Subjective Truths, and I think that that's an important part of understanding, you know, what matters to you. So you can take a profession like law, and you can say, well, you know, if I really do want to live in a city and I want to be in a dynamic culture, and having a nice car is important to me, then that's one kind of lawyer. The other lawyer might say, you know, financial success is not my return. It's really helping people. And that might be somebody looking at doing volunteer work or immigration reform or pro bono work, where you are really close to the people that you're impacting, but the pay isn't there. And so I think it's looking at what are your interests and then adding that kind of second layer of subjective truths. And for many of us, financial element is a key factor. I think once we get above the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, once we get above the kind of necessary elements, more money doesn't necessarily equal more happiness. But certainly knowing what's important to you as the individual, I think, gives you that greater sophistication to think about how to apply your interest to an occupation.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Nathan Gebhard, who is co-author of Roadmap, the Get It Together Guide for Figuring Out What to Do with Your Life. Our next caller is Shannon in Milwaukee. Hi, Shannon.
Hi. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions. I had what I felt was my career, and then I had a special needs child, and my career sort of fell on its head, as did my life. Do you have any suggestions what to do when that kind of thing happens?
So how you might be able to regain a sense of yourself?
Right. Man, I mean, that is that is a complication and a sophistication that is probably beyond my own experience. Yeah. But, you know, I think there's got to be a certain amount of, you know, I think one of the things, and this is coming from a woman we interviewed who is a tattoo artist and community activist, and she referenced kind of this idea of being on the airplane and that instruction of making sure you put the oxygen mask on yourself before assisting others. Mm-hmm. And I know, actually, I have three daughters, and woke up this morning at 3 a.m. with a very sick one. So I understand that place where you have to kind of let go of yourself. But I think, you know, in your case, which is far more intense than just a sick child, it's, I think, trying to find that place where you can still find your identity. If it's helping, if it's music, how can you bring that into supporting your child? And how can you find those places where what makes you sing, you can share that with your child? You know, I'm really speaking without any experience. Yeah. And I wish you the best, and I commend what you're doing.
But maybe speaking generally, if you do encounter roadblocks or setbacks, all of the people that you talked to, pretty much this was not smooth sailing the whole way.
Absolutely. I mean, I think those roadblocks are signals. You know, I think in the more general sense, roadblocks that you encounter are just bits of data, and you have to then confront those and say, okay, cool. I was fired from this job. Did that mean that I'm not capable of this, or did that mean that my views didn't line up with this person? So obviously David Neeleman, in the case of being a vice president at Southwest Airlines, being fired, didn't say you're not capable of running an airline. It just said he wasn't capable of running Southwest, and he went on to create JetBlue. So I think there are places where you have to confront, you know, myself. I was interested in being an artist, but I have, my six-year-old can paint better than I can. And so I have to confront that brutal reality that I will never be a painter, but I might be able to be something like a creative director, which is what I am today, where I can assist people who are more talented than I am to get to that great ideal place.
Yeah. And maybe that ideal place, I'm very glad our caller called in, and I'm sorry that she's been has a special needs child. But sometimes being a mom is your ideal life.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that goes back to. Particularly, I know for my own wife, it goes back to what is success for us. And I think society doesn't necessarily, you know, reward and empower moms. You know, I think when we go out and interact with new people, it's like, oh, what do you do? And
yeah.
We should be celebrating somebody who says, I'm a mom, and this is the most important thing. And I think, unfortunately, we don't do that enough as a society. And the more we can not project our perceptions on others, and the more we can really embrace others in their own definition of success, I think is so important.
Right. Tony in Egg Harbor is with us. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Nathan. There's so many different points, and I know you're up against the hour, so I'll try to make it quick. Graduated high school in 1974, and I knew college wasn't going to be in my future, so I started figuring out who my teachers were going to be. And as a result of that, I've been self-employed for 35 years. I own a company, but I've had other careers while I still had my primary career, and some of my teachers have brought me to my latest career, which is a radio talk show host in Chicago.
Oh,
wow. Awesome.
And Joy Cardine and Larry Mueller and Gene Faraca and Kathleen Dunn and Anthony Bourdain and Anderson Cooper are my teachers.
Wow, yeah. Is that ever... Thank you for calling, Tony. But you have been doing, you say, different jobs along the way. There is no, I think, dream job is what you were saying.
Well, every job has been the dream job, but it hasn't been... It's not a date with destiny to have that dream job and then you die.
Right.
For me, it's been... what I'm doing right now and loving it, but realizing that there's a lot to love.
Right.
And you get to live in Egg Harbor.
Sorry?
And you get to at least visit Egg Harbor.
No, we live in Egg Harbor. We drive in on Sunday mornings to do the radio show.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then we come back on Mondays. I work at my business on Monday. And when we pull into our driveway in Egg Harbor on Monday afternoon, I tell my wife it's been a rough week.
Well, the reason I brought that up is Door County, Egg Harbor is in a gorgeous area in Wisconsin, Nathan. So that's also there's also that.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. I think your story relates to a man named David Banks, who we interviewed, who grew up in Ohio, moved to California with like I think $50, maybe $100 in his pocket. I believe he was dyslexic and did not have, as you had said, college was not in his future or something he could afford. And his solution to kind of hacking his own college education was he would go to, he was interested in film, and USC Film School had an amazing film program, still does, and he would go to their library and he would buy the textbooks from the students who were selling them back. And so he got the education, but it was very much a self-education in that respect. But I love hearing your story, and I think I feel like I have to point out that maybe you're kind of inside the matrix right now.
That's right. On a radio show. Tony, thank you so much for the call. We only have about a minute more to go. Nathan, any last words of advice for us to find our roadmap?
Yeah, I mean, I think I did want to quickly point out to the previous caller, we are actually doing a learning disabilities road trip, all thematic, this coming summer. So I hope to answer that question with much more experience next summer. But if she's interested, she can look out for our upcoming road trip. I think so much of the themes that we've had on this program today really goes around that noise and that idea of just finding our own true self and resisting that sense of conformity. And I think I'd probably leave with one of the more inspiring stories. And it was a guy named Gerard Baker. He's the first Native American superintendent of Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
And when he was telling us his story, he said, you know, when I was, he grew up on a reservation. He started working in the Park Service, cleaning bathrooms. But when he graduated from high school, his nun at a Catholic school told him the best you could do was get a job pumping gas.
Oh, well.
And he resisted that noise, and I think that that's so important.
Will do. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Nathan Gebhard, co-author of Roadmap, the get-it-together guide of figuring out what you want to do with your life. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Caleb Lato for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.